Real Talk on YouTube. Real talk.
Let's get straight to it. What is going on? So, last December, the feds had projected 6 cuts. Some said 3, up to 6 in interest rates. I think we even talked about that.
We talked about it on the pod.
Everybody was psyched.
Yeah.
Inflation was being curbed. Prices were going down. Everybody was psyched. Well, since then, we have had multiple robust hiring reports. In March, there were over 330,000 new jobs, new hires, which is strong. Prices, core prices on things, gas, housing, just prices in general, food, are not necessarily going down at the trends and projections that we thought they were in December. The stock market is operating still hot. It almost hit 40,000. It's really hot right now. And so there's a lot of just kind of mixed signals happening in our economy right now. Nationally, people say that we're in somewhat of a housing recession, but a strong economic position. Now, I think that the numbers are a little bit misleading.
Like deceiving?
I think so. I think that all the hiring we've experienced that have been part of why the feds haven't dropped rates are because of immigration. I think a lot of these jobs are blue-collared. I think the white-collar jobs, a lot of the bigger corporate jobs, have experienced a lot of layoffs. And so I think that we're kind of misreading those numbers. Mm-hmm. And so whenever you report 330,000 new jobs and prices are still elevated and continuing to go up, well, then obviously the Federal Reserve cannot lower interest rates. Yep. And so I think through the rest of the year, I don't think that we'll have any interest rate drops. And I predict that housing nationally will really plateau. And I say that to say people are still even more so going to be unwilling to give up their 3% rate for a 7% rate. And until we get those rates down in the upper 5s or lower 6, we'll probably can still see kind of a lockup on the market.
I agree. I think the feds too, people forget. I mean, the feds, when you have an incumbent president coming for re-election, if you looked in history, Republican, Democrat, Independent, I don't think it matter. The news is going to try to spin it in kind of like a, hey, it's not bad, we just can't lower. I think that's why the numbers are a little misleading maybe. You know, you're giving the good numbers instead of some of the bad because it's an election year. It would look worse if you were like, hey, our hiring isn't great. Mm-hmm. Stuff like that. So I definitely don't think we're going to see a cut. I can't believe some people think
this. Dude, it doesn't look like it.
No.
I know. I was kind of the idiot that was like, yeah, I think we'll get 3 cuts.
Which I guess you never know. I mean, if inflation rate did drop and all that stuff, it could happen.
It looked like it was trending, like it was going to, and then
you think
false alarm.
You think people in the market, though, are kind of like, are they still waiting on that? Or are they over it at this point?
I think there's been some level of acceptance. I think people are moving for life events. People are moving for a job. People are moving for schools. People are moving for a divorce. You know, people are moving because they have more kids. Like, there's significant life events, mm-hmm. and that's why people are moving. And so, used to, it was like, hey, it makes a lot of sense. We're going to flip this house, take a bunch of cash, and get into another 2.5% rate. And so you'd see volume and you'd see turnover, which is how real estate brokerages really make their money. But now it's life events that are causing a move.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And I think it's not necessarily, would you, as a broker, would you recommend waiting? Would you recommend not really caring?
The thing about it is, like, you know, in Northwest Arkansas, it's just a different story. And there's still a ton of opportunities because our home values appreciate. outside of the norm. And so take that for what you will.
Yeah, yeah.
But like,
well, I know for me personally, when I was looking at buying a house or waiting and renting for a year, trying to decide, I realized we're at such a point right now of how long it's been that if we don't buy a house, imagine when rates do drop, how expensive houses. I'd almost rather pay more in interest than pay it that much more.
It all evens out.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just hard to go wrong unless there is an absolute glut of inventory. If there's a glut of supply, it may not be appropriate. But whenever you just don't have the inventory, rates are up, buy, doesn't matter.
How's
your
NWA?
Price is going to drop. Rates are down, buy, doesn't matter. Prices aren't going to drop. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
so it's
yeah,
just absolutely. A supply and demand thing.
So as long as you don't really hit it at the worst of either point, you're going to be fine.
Yeah. As long as there's just not a flood of inventory or supply. Or just a flood that's coming on the market, which we aren't even close to that. We are a long way from
Isn't
that.
Inventory is not great in the NWA, right?
No, we still don't have enough.
Yeah, that's what an agent was telling me the other day. They're like, you'd think we'd have inventory pickup.
Well, no. I mean, new construction, we're trying. But
yeah, that's crazy. Well, I thought today we'd get a little into kind of the story of you. You know, what... I think that helps a lot of people to realize. I know that's one thing I love to hear is how people get to where they are so that you know why they think the way they do, why their brain works the way it does. So mm-hmm. Where did it all start for you?
Well, I grew up in a little farm town in eastern Arkansas.
What was it called?
Augusta.
Augusta, baby.
On the banks of the mighty, mighty White River.
Heck yeah.
And so my granddad farmed there soybeans, rice, milo, corn, not a lot of cotton. And then my dad and my mom met in college and we moved back there. And so I grew up there with, I got two brothers.
Nice.
So us three.
That's crazy. Were you big into fishing, hunting, outdoors stuff?
Yeah. I worked on the farm every summer. I started working on the farm.
What'd you do on
the
farm?
I think I was 13.
Everything?
I was a bean boy. No, it was terrible. It was boring.
What's a bean boy? I don't know.
You literally just stack 50-pound sacks of beans, and then every hour the combine comes through and you load the hoppers full of beans, and then you get it in the truck. It was an old... You know, big ass kind of cargo truck. And it was a stick. And you move it up about 20 feet and you wait another hour. And you do it again.
Golly.
For 13 hours. No kidding.
Well, how old were you when you started doing
that? There were some crazy stories, though. One time there was a dude out there we worked with. I mean, just straight up redneck, bro. You know what I mean? And we called him Snappy because he kind of looked like a snapping turtle. That's his name. And anyway, he was asleep in the bean truck one day, and he had his mouth open like that. And I picked up a dirt claw. It was so boring. You had to figure out stuff to do. And I lobbed it up, and it broke right on his teeth. And it went all in his mouth. And he was pissed. And so I take off running. You know, I'm 13. He's probably 17. And I run in the woods, and he's chasing after me, just yelling threats at me. Well, I use this brain. The power of thinking is better than your physical stature.
100%.
And so what I did was I had some old... I was playing baseball that summer. You know, when you slide into the bag, you'd get roughed up. So I had some old scabs.
Yeah.
And I picked all those scabs. And I started bleeding. And so I walked out of the woods waving a white flag, just limping, saying I ran into barbed wire and I was already hurt, so he couldn't hurt me.
Smart.
Yeah.
Smart. Yeah. He thought you took your punishment just
running. Exactly.
He's like, we're good.
Yeah.
Dude, the farm will make it. I mean, My grandpa has told me stories of him and his brother, how they would prank each other to stay
so
relevant.
Bored.
They would literally hide chicken snakes in places they knew the other one would go.
Yeah.
Because they knew it's non-venomous, but it hurts.
Yeah.
It's one of the rat snake, one of the hardest biting snakes around here. And they would put it in the chicken coop when he'd go check eggs and stuff. He said they would just bite each other. He's like, I've been bit by probably 16 times.
Dude.
Threw it in his bed.
I mean, yeah, living in a small town, the stuff you do to pass the time.
Did you like it, though? You liked living in a small town?
I wouldn't have it any other way, yeah. Yeah, it was good.
Just really like...
We just roamed free, you know what I mean? We just did our own thing. We had a charge account at the grocery store. Pegs, you know, on our bikes. You know what that
yeah.
is?
Yeah.
You could put your boy on the back.
Heck yeah. Ride hold dirty. Your shoulders, yeah. kind of chilling. Yeah. That's awesome.
No, it was good, man.
Did you... How long were you there?
So I went there and then transferred over to Searcy, the big city.
The big city.
Augusta had 2,000 people. Well, maybe 2,500 at the time. And then Searcy had like 17,000.
Okay. Honestly, though, Searcy is getting
Yeah, it's huge. Doing good now. Yeah.
They have a Texas Roadhouse. You don't have a Texas
Brand
Roadhouse.
Brand new.
Yeah. I went there the other day and I didn't recognize it. I was like, wow. I guess Harding helps it and all that. But man, it was... What else does Searcy, Arkansas have? Like, are they just known for Harding? Or do they have, like, oil? Or are they crop farmers? Like, what do they do? As a
kind yeah, of that's a good question. They got some manufacturing. Their healthcare scene is big.
Oh, okay, that's right.
They have White County Memorial Hospital. And then the university, Harding University's there. So
and Harding's other... up a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So that's kind of it.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's cool. And Augusta's known for...
farming.
Yeah, that's about it. Nice. And then where'd you move? So after you graduated from high school?
Oh, yeah. I went to Ole Miss.
Wow.
I sure did. I went to Ole Miss. Because Ole Miss is closer to Augusta than it is, than Fayetteville is to really? Augusta. Yeah.
Dang.
Yeah, so I did that whole scene.
I never realized it was that much closer.
Then, when I took time off and I went out to Vail, Colorado, by myself. And in the newspaper, I was looking for jobs and I found an ad to go through this training program. It was a ton of hours to be a whitewater rafting guide.
No way.
Yeah, and I went and I showed up and there were 50 of us. And we all showed up and we did, like, we went down to Moab, Utah, and we did the Arkansas, the Eagle, and Colorado River. And they picked 15 of us and I was one of them that was picked. So I was a whitewater rafting guide out
That's
there.
That's sweet.
Mm-hmm. I was 20.
Dang.
I know.
They brought 50 out there. They're like, whoever survives is the
Pretty
guy.
Much. It was hard.
It's intense, though, isn't it?
Hardcore.
I can only imagine how much those guys have to go through, too.
Yeah.
I mean, you got like 7-8 people's lives in your hand, pretty much.
Yeah, about getting. Sometimes 10.
Yeah. So you did that for a while?
Mm-hmm.
Did you like it?
Yes.
I feel like you'd love
I loved
that.
It. I got a little lonely, though. Like, I got a little homesick.
In Colorado in general?
Yeah. Yeah. I was just solo and, like, I made some friends, but I just never really... I got homesick.
Yeah.
I was forced home, though. I didn't really choose to come home. You're you know that story?
Home? I don't think so. Forced home.
So I was kind of wild. I was, you know, whatever. And I was going up to a string cheese concert. It's kind of like Widespread.
That's
and all
a
that.
Band. There's
yeah,
a band
yeah, there. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And Steamboat Springs. And so I was going up there. I was actually following some of my buddies. And I had my sunroof open. No kidding. I had my sunroof open and I missed a turn. And I had a 4Runner and my truck rolled. And I was on one of those rolls. I ended up outside.
No.
I went through the sunroof, I guess, is all I can imagine. And so, like, I guess whenever it rolled where the face was down from the sunroof, I dropped out of that sunroof. I didn't have my seatbelt on, thank God. That's what saved me. But I came out from under that steering wheel, and my car was, I mean, it rolled 2,000 feet just forever down that mountain. And And I survived, but I had torn my aorta. I tore my aorta, which is a highly percentage of fatality for people that do that. And so they airlifted me to Denver Health. And I was in the ICU for a while with a torn aorta.
Dang.
And so I ended up going back to Ole Miss.
Yeah.
After that. But I mean, literally, I think it was a 90, I think the doctor said 90 plus fatality rate, where they had called my family and they were like, hey, you got to hurry. He's not going to make it. Probably.
Dang.
So.
And you had a big surgery. How long was your recovery?
They didn't even do surgery.
Oh, you just like.
No, normally you do a tear in the interior wall of your aorta and that blood will erode it and it'll rupture and you die. Well, scar tissue healed over mine. So they gave me a lot of beta blockers to slow my heart rate down, slow that flow down, and scar tissue healed over it. I think I'm okay.
You're still alive now.
I don't know, bro. Sometimes I'll feel it acting a little weird, and I'll be like, oh, it's time to go. But I think I'm okay now.
How long were you in the hospital?
I was in the ICU, I don't know, 4 or 5 days.
That's it.
Bro, I was ready to get up out of there.
I bet.
Bro.
I could see you.
I called my granddad.
I could so, just knowing you, me. I could so see you being that guy that they're like, where'd he go? I'm like, yeah, he checked himself out.
It was like
that.
Yeah.
He waived all rights to leave.
So then I went back to Oxford. You know what? That's where I was 20 years old. And I think that is when I knew I had a drug and alcohol problem. I think that's when I knew. Because I was inebriated at the time. It was like in the morning time, too. And when I got back, I swore it off. You know what I mean? I was like, I'm done. I'm never doing another drug. And I think I really meant it. You know what I mean? Like, I really had conviction.
Yeah,
I didn't want to die.
You're probably mad at yourself almost.
And they took my freaking urine and blood in the hospital and gave me a DUI. From almost dying. I'm like, is dying not enough? Now you're going to try to put me in jail? But I deserved it.
Yeah.
Nonetheless, I swore it off, Spence. I was like, no more. At that time, that's when I knew I had a problem. And it lasted about 2 days. I just couldn't do it.
That's a hard time, too, though, to get over it, huh?
Yeah.
When you're still in pain.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's not no easy task to just get mad enough at it.
Right. Yeah. No, I know. That never worked.
So then you went back to Oxford.
Uh-huh.
Where'd you work? Did you just go to college or were you working?
Yeah, I studied psychology.
Okay.
I was pre-med and I was taking chemistry labs and stuff. And like, I mean, I was kind of working, like I was kind of studying and stuff. And then everybody else in there was making like straight A's and I was making B's. And so I was just kind of like, man, I just don't, like, they're making it look too easy. Like, I'm really not.
Might not be like them.
Yeah, exactly. I kind of had a, I was like, I'm not.
That's how
I'm not that smart.
That's like, how I felt at the U of A when I did computer science.
I
and
bet.
The first day, they're like,
yeah.
All right, raise your hand if you know Java. I'm like, and every kid's like,
bro,
yep. Been
they
doing
knew
it.
Everything already. I'm
yeah.
Like, how do they even know all this stuff?
They like been in a hospital already working and
I
stuff.
I swear, bro. Like, if you really needed a gallbladder out, they would take it out.
In class.
That's my point. You know?
Not
so I was started out behind. But anyway, I did psychology after that. Honestly, I was like, what is the easiest major? I needed a break. I always had good grades, though. But I was like, what's the easiest major? All this stuff will transfer. I think I was chemistry and biology, so it was psychology. So that's what I did.
Did you like... I feel like you'd like psychology, though.
Oh, yeah.
You probably started liking it later in life even more, too.
Yeah, I loved it. Because, you know, you didn't really have to study. It was such a hack. You really didn't.
You just thought of what you would think of.
It was such a hack.
That's awesome.
So I did that. And then, you want me to keep going?
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. And then my parents, I was wild. And so, and I was abusing drugs and alcohol straight up. And so my parents were like, we're not, they thought Ole Miss was the problem.
Yeah.
Typical parents.
Yeah, yeah.
I was the problem. Wherever, like, I was the problem, not where I was. So yeah. You put me in Fayetteville, which is what they did, to be closer to people that I knew from back home. University of Arkansas, I enrolled there. Well, I was still there. So that didn't slow down my destructive behavior.
Mm-hmm.
But nonetheless, I came up to the U of A and finished my degree in psychology up here at the U of A.
Dang.
But while I was still enrolled up here, I met my wife. And she got pregnant. And so where I'm from, when that happens, you get married. And so I don't think either of us really wanted to get married. She was on a really good trajectory. She was like, I think she was the president of her fashion design school.
Wow.
And she won some big award making clothes. And so she was planning on going somewhere. I don't remember where. But she got pregnant. And so that'll be 20 years. We'll have been together 20 years in August. We got married.
That's crazy.
We got married in August. And I think, you know, we have grown up together. You know what I mean? That's mm-hmm. what's so cool about our relationship is, like, it's not a fairy tale, man. You know, it's like, it's blood, sweat, and tears. And we can talk about that more on if we want. But, you know, we really grew to love each other. We really fell in love over time through experience, sharing life, hardship, kids, the good times, the bad times. I mean, we've had a little money and then lost it all. Have a little money, but you don't have to be tied to it. Once you have these experiences and you have a partner that doesn't really care about success, it gives you a lot of power, you know? And so she's been that person for me. But it started out by, like, just kind of a involuntary marriage due to a new little gene named P. Diddy Presley.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we got married, and we were young, son, 22.
And this is, like, 04?
How'd you know that?
Because you said 20 years this
brainiac.
August.
Brainiac.
And yeah, it's 2024.
Dude. Yeah, I was busting tables at Logan's, bro.
Oh, dang.
Yeah, I was busting tables, trying to finish school. You know, and then little buddy was born December 22nd, 2004.
Dang.
Yeah.
Little stud.
So your boy had to grow up quick. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Your boy had to grow up, but I could not shake drugs and alcohol. I wanted to be a good man.
Did you have, like, talks to yourself during that time of, like, I don't want to have a kid and be with this stuff?
Oh, all day long, dude, just guilt and shame. I knew that wasn't the move.
Yeah.
You know, like, I was not trying to use and abuse alcohol. And I just knew that was not the move. But I could not stop, Spence. I just couldn't stop. And I think I was experiencing just a lot of stress and anxiety. And I was trying to quiet that. And just my personality. I'm an all-in guy. I'm either all-in or all-out. And I was all-in.
Yeah.
With drugs and alcohol. And it just got to where, like, it was just totally controlling my life. So, crazy. I finished school, barely, got a degree, and about 15 days later, I broke. And Presley wasn't even one. This was in August, like, we had been married just a year. I would go to rehab in California, my first rehab. I knew I couldn't stop on my own, dude. I was 23.
So you just signed yourself up for it?
Yeah.
Nice.
Sure did. And then I got back, and Sarah Boyce was working at Eco Sheet, a little clothing shop. And Presley was just a little buddy. And now I was looking for a job. because I had a degree. I mean, I had a job working just little minimum wage stuff, but a real job, a career. So I go and I interview with a nursing home because I want to be an administrator in training and then be an administrator and run nursing homes. Well, I go, I bring a briefcase, had nothing in it. No lie.
Just the look.
Just the briefcase, bro. This was 2004. No kidding. A guy from my hometown set me up with the interview. So I go in, I interview. This guy's named John Ellis. Great guy. Well, anyway, I interview with him. I tell him I want the administrator and training job. I leave my briefcase in there. In the freaking interview.
Oh.
And I come back and I'm like, hey, I need my briefcase. Well, John was supposed to go back to Conway, which is the headquarters, but an administrator, something happened at another nursing home. So he was at Dillard's and I was coming down the escalator four hours after that interview. I don't even know what we were doing at the mall. Sarah Boyce and I just wanted to get out. We'd take Presley to walk around if it was raining. And I was on the phone with my dad and he said, son, I don't care what you do. You need a paying job. He knew I needed some structure. And so I'm not even capping. As soon as he said that, at the bottom of the escalators was John Ellis, the guy I interviewed with. And so I walked up to him and I said, John, I think you misunderstood me. I just need a paying job. I just repeated those words. And he said, well, we may have something for you in the kitchen. So I show up and I work in the kitchen of a nursing home with a hairnet. For 6 months and a college degree. That's how I got my start.
Nice. But it's what you needed, huh? You take that away.
Just what
you
I
might
needed.
Take everything else away.
Just what I needed.
Yeah.
For real. It's just what I needed. I was the opposite of there wasn't any room for ego.
Yeah.
I was as humble, straight out of rehab, trying to get a job with a little family.
Were you playing at this time?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. I had some good years after that.
Good.
And then, do you want to hear what happened?
100%.
So then I was working in that kitchen. And I've always been a hard worker. I really have. I've always worked hard. And so they recognized that. And they pulled me out of the kitchen. And they said, hey, we're going to give you a shot. And so I was going through this training program, this administrator in training program. Well, I got my license. I got my nursing home administrator's boards. And I kind of fast-tracked it a little bit on purpose. Well, then, when I had it, an administrator at North Hills Life Care and Rehab over by Washington Regional got fired, bro. And I was young, cuz I think I was still 23. And they put me over there because I was the only one with the license on an interim basis. How old are you?
23.
I was your age. On an interim basis. When I got there, they had a group of people that were killers. Just awesome, hardworking people. And I got there and they said, just give us 60 days to find somebody. Well, you know what?
You said you want to keep that job, huh?
We started making money. Yep. We started pulling that staff together and we built something special. We implemented, I've always been one to understand the value and everybody else recognize it and put it together with other people's values that complement that to create something special. It's never been like, oh, because I'm just going to be this dynamic leader. It's not even that. I'm very average, really, intelligence. I really am. But I do know how to recognize people's skill set. And so what we did, we revolutionized the nursing home industry up here in NWA. And we implemented something called culture change. We took all the power from the front office people and gave it to the direct caregivers, the CNAs and the LPNs.
Smart.
They did all their own scheduling. We broke it up into neighborhoods. The residents decide when they got up, when they ate, what they wanted to do. The CNAs started running the activities. Versus one social service director for 120 patients.
Yeah, that doesn't know what's going on.
We did permanent assignment. They don't know the details of the residents. Those residents trust those CNAs more than anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were dedicated to those neighborhoods. We were voted the number one nursing home in the state of Arkansas in U.S. News and World Report.
That's awesome.
And your boy was like 25, I think, 26. But I was clean and I was good. I wasn't using drugs. And then they asked me to go open up a brand new nursing home. Well, so in other words, they left me there. And I ran that nursing home. And those were some of the best times. You know, so I'm not even kidding you either. There's some CNAs out there, dude. I mean, you realize what they do. They, like, clean residents the soil and just, like, they do all...
They do everything no one else wants to do.
And they don't make a lot of money. But I'm telling you, there's some CNAs out there that would rival Mother Teresa. And it's just, like, some of the best people that I've ever met to this day have been CNAs.
One of my friends worked for a lady who's been a CNA for, like, 25, 30 years. Not even like one of those young, like she's been content with just doing all the work that no one else wants to do. I have a bunch of nursing friends and they said they didn't realize how valuable they were until there was a CNA shortage recently during COVID and stuff. Because no one wanted to do that for $18 an hour or whatever it was. So there was a shortage and then the nurses started having to do that stuff. And they really started appreciating the CNAs.
Yeah. Some of the best people I've ever met.
But you liked that job, huh?
I love the people. Yeah. And the residents. I love old people, bro. Mm-hmm. They're funny as hell. Because they're honest.
Did you learn a lot from them, you think? And just passing? And
yeah, I think so. I'll tell you what, though. Running a nursing home is the best entrepreneurial boot camp you can ever do. You realize you got to know human resources. Dude, I was 23, and I had 100 staff members. That's weird.
Yeah,
my business office manager was like 60. But anyway, you got to learn human resource, social service, all of nursing. You got to know how to run a kitchen or a restaurant. I'm ServSafe certified, cuz. You don't even know what to talk about. Activities, financial, business office. Think about
marketing,
all
external.
The marketing, yeah. All the pieces that touches, budgets.
And you have a lot of oversight from the government and all that, right?
Yeah.
Regulations, medical. I mean, it is, nursing homes are incredibly complex.
They are.
It's not just like you throw together a little summer camp kind of thing for old people.
Exactly. Yeah, there's a lot of regulation. But anyway, you want me to keep going?
100%.
Okay, so then I go to, did you know they asked me to open up Catherine's Place, which is a nursing home. It's a brand new nursing home. At the time, it was probably the nicest in the South. It was kind of the premier thing. It was.
Where's this at?
It's on Weddington.
Okay, cool.
And it's still sick. I mean, it's been a while, but it's still like, it's really nice. So I went over there and just had to staff it. From day one, had to hire 100 plus people, and we didn't have any patients. Had to order all the stuff, get everything set up, and start taking residents. And so I did that. And that was less enjoyable. You know, I think a lot of it was just kind of, I missed a lot of the people I used to work with. Mm-hmm. But nonetheless, it worked. For the company, you know what I mean? I mean, we made money and did a good job. We were a 5-star.
Just not as enjoyable.
Nursing home. Mm-hmm. It was almost more corporate. I'm not a corporate guy. And the company I worked for got so big and they really turned corporate. Like, I'm just a freaking blue collar dude, man.
Yeah.
I'm not on that extra energy at all. I don't like rules and red tape and all the bullshit. Like, I'm not a corporate guy.
No.
I'm just not. And it got a little corporate, which I get it. They were getting big. But I didn't like that. So I actually ran that nursing home. And this is when I fell off bad. I was one of the fast 15 people. You know what that is?
Mm.
It's 15 people in their 20s on a fast track to success, you know?
Mm.
And it was the Arkansas business. And I was one of them, and I thought I was something. You know, I just kind of was like thinking that I'm like my ego. And then I got back on drugs bad. And that was when it just, you know, there is such a thing with the pride before the fall.
100%.
You know, and I just.
Humbles you a little.
Yeah. And so I got back on, and it was bad.
worse than the time before.
All day.
Yeah.
So, do you want to know about that?
You had more money and
exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, I basically quit my job there just because I knew I was unhealthy. I was probably going to get fired. And I was actually prescribed some cough medicine, some codeine. And because I legit had a cough. Well, he gave me like 3 refills or whatever, just like a normal doctor, like thought I was a normal person. And I drank that bottle, dude. And no kidding, like probably 24 hours, bam, refill, boom, boom, boom. And I was off to the races. I had discovered opiates. And this was like 11 or maybe even 10, 11, something like that. Before CMS really started monitoring it. This is when doctors were prescribing it like crazy. And I got on Oxycontin. And I mean, it took me down. It took me down. So I go to rehab. I go back out to that California rehab. And when I got back, I stayed sober for 30 days. It was a continuation of just a downhill spiral.
So this is second time at that rehab?
We lost everything. We lost everything. I didn't have a steady income. I had to sell our nice house and move into a little 1,100 square foot condo, which was fine, whatever. But we had like a big house, and yeah. Now we go to rent.
It's hard.
Lost everything. And I had 2 kids and just had nothing. Didn't have a pot to piss in. And so I tried to start some businesses, and they failed, of course, and took out debt. And it was just truly a downhill spiral. We got to the point where Sarah Boyce kicked me out of the house. She said, "You got to go," which I mean, I don't blame her. And so I was just down and out in Beverly Hills. I was just depressed because I've always loved my family, no matter what. I've always that's my number one thing. You know what I'm saying? It's like, you got kids, man. Like, they're everything to me. And so I felt a lot of shame and guilt about all that, which just perpetuated. Well, anyway, she had kicked me out, and I was just ended up overdosing. And my brother found me, and I was blue and not breathing, staying at a little condo. He walked in and found me. So they called 911 and they shot me with that Narcan, and it didn't work. And they shot me again. And finally I came back. So at that point, nobody came and saw me in the hospital except my mom. And I couldn't see my kids. Sir Boyce didn't come see me at the hospital, which again, I don't blame her. She's smart. If she would have just cut me out, she'd been smart, you know?
Well, it probably in the grand scheme of your story, I'm guessing it helped kind of that she did do that.
Probably. The only one, you know, my mom's going, Mama's gonna always be there for you.
No matter what you do.
Yeah. And so 10 years ago in August, I went down to a rehab in Louisiana. And this damn place was like a boot camp. I mean, hardcore, which is just what I needed. I stayed down there for 7 months. Living in a halfway house. And when I got back, I just had to, it was just a fresh start. And I was so full of joy and just so proud to be sober and back with my family. I didn't even care. And I learned a valuable lesson. You can experience peace, happiness, and joy outside of your circumstances, which gives you the freedom. It gives you so much freedom. We don't have to be tied to the material things and the circumstances of this world. And I remember that light went off because I was the most joyful and at peace when I was living in a halfway house without a pot to piss in Rayville, Louisiana. Now, touch me now. You can't. I don't care if the whole business goes under. I don't want it to, but it ain't that big of a deal.
Yeah.
You got your family. You're not on drugs. It's all upside from there. And I came back with that genuine attitude. I ain't got nothing to lose, cuz I've already lost it.
Yeah, you're just living on extra
time. It's a freedom.
Mm-hmm.
And then you experience these things outside of your circumstances, and it's just such a powerful thing. And so I try to stay in that gratitude. I try to stay in that gratitude and was able to come back. I started selling drug tests, toxicology tests, to try to make ends meet. And then the real estate thing happened totally by accident.
Accident?
Just... totally by accident.
Get into that a little bit, I think.
Well, so I was out in front of I was with my buddy, John David Black. I was in his front yard, and a lady came out, his neighbor. Her name was Shannon Eldridge. And she said, John David said that you have a broker's license. She said, can I put my license with you? She was at Lindsay, I think. And I said, oh, honey, I don't have anything for you. It's just me. I got nothing. She said,
perfect. Because you were a realtor just with your own license.
Yeah, so yeah, exactly. And so I said, I don't have anything for you. And she said, perfect. So she came over, and I started seeing deals by signing her contracts and seeing how things were working. And I just thought, why? We could do this so much better. The brokerage business, especially at the time, was just so antiquated and just so low level. I mean, really, it really was.
Mm-hmm.
And so we kind of set our chart from there as just a value-based thing, going, what can we do different? And that's why we're real estate done differently, and that's stayed with us the whole time. And we've always pushed the status quo. And you know how I am. I mean, even like in the nursing home, I'm going to take all the power from the front and give them to the bottom. And we're all going to equal up, and we're not going to do this hierarchy corporate stuff. And we've experienced significant power with that approach. And we've leveraged technology. We've leveraged how to build a beautiful culture that supports one another. We've leveraged how to take each individual skill set and share it with the rest. You got 100 people sharing their best skill set with 100 other people.
Yeah.
Things can happen, you know. And so the real estate thing, for a lot of reasons, I mean, that's 3 or 4, but there's probably 40 or 50. For a lot of reasons, we've experienced growth.
Nice.
And so that's kind of where we are today. Now we're kind of massive. We got 250 people.
Dude, I always kind of forget until we do like that house meeting like we just did.
Yeah.
And then you see everyone in a room and it's not even everyone and you're like, dang, this is it hard, like crazy for you looking out there?
Dude, it's crazy.
Seeing
it's crazy.
So many people.
It's just been such a surprise. It's such a blessing. Just been such a gift, Spence. It's really just been a gift beyond, you know. They always say, don't pray for an outcome because you'll sell yourself short. And that's the case. I could have never drawn it up like this.
I think it'd be hard to look out there and see that many agents that kind of have come together. I think that's why you have found success. You have those. The same thing as the nursing home. Just realizing too, because for real estate, it's perfect. All these, a lot of big brokerages corporatized, partly because they have to when you have that many locations. I get why corporate America exists. Mm-hmm. It's the only way to survive at a certain point. But there's something so nice about the flexibility in a smaller place that doesn't have to do that. Follow all those rules and, hey, sorry, you can't talk to this guy. He's too busy for you. You got to kind of go through the chain of command and stuff.
Not the move. I always say I want to grow and feel small.
Mm-hmm.
I never want to lose our heart of who we are and what we are. I don't ever want to sell out.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, I don't know. Maybe that's a little dramatic, but.
No, I think that's really, I think that some of the things you guys do too, like the round tables and offering some of those kind of things, really help that.
Exactly.
Because it keeps it, like those round tables, they're decently big size, but I mean 25, 30 agents at a time. So it feels like you can ask questions and talk to each other and sit in the room with a high level agent, maybe as a new agent. I've loved all those kind of things y'all are implementing a lot practically.
What else is good? What's going on in NWA?
I think some of the summertime events, the farmer's market started back up.
When Saturday?
Was it Vibey?
Absolutely.
I've heard it's the biggest one. Like, they keep adding
to it. Did you go to Tron, or did you go to Bentonville or Fayetteville?
I went to Bentonville.
Okay. I went to Fayetteville.
Is Fayetteville's nice this year, too?
Yeah. Fayetteville's always steady down there, bro.
Bentonville's getting huge. Like, almost overwhelmed.
Fayetteville keeps it real on the freaking product. Fayetteville, you go, you're going to get some beets, dog. Like, you're going to get, like, some organic, like, deep in the ground.
From, like, a potatoes. Sweet Amish family.
Straight up.
Like, just...
Or a Vietnamese family out in Madison County that knows their game.
100%.
Like, they keep the product fresh. You go up to Bentonville, they'll be having drawings and selling trinkets. In Fayetteville, you go to get the daggum nutrition and minerals, dog. You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
Like, yeah, bro.
You get that damn fruit salad. Like, nice. Theo, you just open up your mouth and just drag it through a damn garden going down God. There, bro. Just get them nutrients at that Fayetteville Farmer's Market.
Bro, I think just being there, you're going to be more...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, know. You're absorbing those damn...
I like Fayetteville's square a lot. What else is good in the summer? Are you going to start hitting City Park back up now that the...
Yeah, but they got to figure out their parking, dude.
Oh, I've not been there since then.
Yeah.
It's tough. Parking in Northwest Arkansas in general is a little bit of a trick now. It's not horrible, but it's getting tricky.
It's tricky.
In Fayetteville, I was there the other day on Dixon Street area, and I couldn't find parking. It was during the U of A school days.
Yeah. They're building that parking deck down there. That'll be good. Oh, it's tough when you got like a little one-off restaurant with no parking that's not even close to the square.
You know what else is popping in NWA lately?
What?
Have you seen the Walmart home office lately?
No.
Dude, you need to drive by there. It is crazy.
Really?
They have... It just came together all of a sudden. They put a road in it, in the middle. And that was like, if you would have told me, oh, they're going to put a road in, it's going to look like the home office. I would have been like, yeah, right. Dude, they put this road straight down the center, and it's perfectly symmetrical. If you're at 8th Street Market looking over, it is so sick. Really? I mean, just the cool... It's going to be like a city. Like, you're going to say... Hey, Bentonville, Bella Vista, Walmart Home Office, Rogers, I mean, like, it is a city.
You know, that
city.
Wright's Barbecue is going in at the home office.
I think they're putting a few restaurants.
Did you see that?
All throughout. No, yeah, I didn't.
Dude, Wright's just, they're set up, man. There's renderings, too. Show it on these podcasts.
I will. So what's this new platform you guys have talked about that you're about to start leveraging?
It's called Call Your Connect. And basically, it's a platform that our agents can leverage by uploading buyer parameters. So if they have buyers that are looking for a 4-bedroom, 2-bath house in Cave Springs, they can upload those parameters onto our portal. It's called Call Your Connect again. We also have the opportunity to upload listings, to upload properties for sale. A lot of those are off market. A lot of those are properties that the public does not necessarily want a sign in the yard. They don't necessarily want to do open houses. They don't want to necessarily have people come in and tromp through their house. And so it's an easy conversation to, hey, we'll put it on the internal portal. And then there's also some listings on there that are kind of like a make me move price. And so we have established software that holds that information. And I'm going to tell you the implications of that. The implications are that when our buyers are looking for property, we can show them potentially 100+ properties that are otherwise unavailable to the public, right?
Yeah.
So the other side of that is when our agents are going to listing appointments.
I agree.
When they're talking to people, they can go, listen, we already got 4 people in the firm who have buyers that match this exact house. They want your property. Now, do you think you're going to get that listing as an agent? You think you're going to get that house sold? Absolutely. That is true value.
Okay.
And so by building this network of data as it relates to properties for sale, and what buyers are looking for, we can internally make these connections. And we can then allow agents to have 100+ properties to sell from that are otherwise unavailable and arm those agents with buyers when they go to listing agreements. The other thing, the third thing that it does, it's most powerful, is we can allow the consumers an opportunity to not do the whole dog and pony show and to not put it public as a listing with signage and calls and open houses and showings necessarily from the public. By saying, hey, we'll throw it on our portal for 30 days. We'll kind of get some feedback. You may sell it, but either way, we know if we're priced right, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
We're super excited. We think it can really be a big change for Northwest Arkansas.